All right. Hello and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and we're here for part of our micronutrients module. It's on minerals, and the mineral we're doing is what's called an ultra trace mineral, and it's called vanadium. So we'll go into vanadium and teach you a lot about vanadium. This is a relatively short presentation compared to some of the really long and complicated ones like all the B vitamins that we've done. So before we begin, I just want to remind you that as I'm presenting and whenever you're presenting to your patients or clients, it's really important to be aware that the information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical practitioner, healthcare practitioners, and it's not medical advice. And a lot of times people hear what you say and they're going to take it as you're giving them, you know, cures and solutions to their ailments. And really what we're there for as coaches and guiders and helping them to access their inner healer and get out of its way. So whenever you have someone who's on any kind of medication, as much as we may not really like the medication they're on or feel like it's the best thing, we've always got to defer to their medical practitioner to make sure that they check in. And so, and the same thing with you, if you're on these calls with me and we have a conversation, I may give you some advice, but you know, it's your responsibility to make sure you have the education before you implement it for yourself or your clients. So vanadium is a trace, an ultra trace mineral. Ultra trace meaning it's only needed in teeny, 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 tiny amounts. And it was first discovered in the early 1800s. And interestingly enough, it was named for a Swedish goddess of beauty, youth, and luster. And that was the Vanadis. I'm going to write it down right away. There's an error on that slide. Okay. Give me a second while I pull out my notes and I write down this timing. Right, 2 minutes in. Okay. There's an error on the slide. That should be two bullet points. So it's named for the Swedish goddess. Okay, I'm going to start that again. Tongue-tied today. So it's named for the Swedish. I can't say this today. It's named for the Swedish goddess of beauty, youth, and luster called Vanadis. And the reason for this is that in solution, it produces a number of different colors depending on its valency. And we'll look at a chart that shows that, its ionic state. But it has all these beautiful colors. So they named it after the Swedish goddess of beauty, youth, and luster. So it's primarily found in what's called the pentavalent state, which is 5 positives, and it's a yellowish orange in that state. So that's the main poor form of it. It complexes with amino acids like alanine and aspartate and can help them with absorption and utilization. It's not been proven to be an essential mineral for humans. There's no RDA for vanadium, but we are looking at needing it in small amounts. And everything that I'm sharing with you today is very much... I'm going to have to stop this again because somebody keeps Skyping me and that's not good because it beep, beep, beeps and it's going to hear that on this thing. So give me a second to turn that microphone off. I'm going to turn the Skype notifications off. And all right, let me turn this off. View call. Audio set. Sorry. It's like I said, it's been one of those weeks that has sent me to the beach a lot. And now I can't even change my Skype settings so that it turns. Okay. I'm going to turn off notifications, audio settings. There we go. I'm going to make this go to a speaker that I can't hear because there's been a lot of problems on our website today. And we have a team chat on Skype and everybody's back and forth trying to get it fixed. So I've got the speakers are set to my microphone. Microphone, so it's going to go in the background. Okay, and that's good. Whew. Okay, so sorry about that. So I'm going to write down here from about 2 minutes, and then at 4:33. Okay, so we're going to go back to where I said about whether it's an essential mineral. So it hasn't been proven to be essential for humans, although there's a lot of indications that it has some really good properties in the body and really important functions in the body, and then when there's an overt deficiency, that there are some complications. So to me, that says that it is important, even though we haven't determined a specific amount. So very small amounts, but it seems like it is needed. Controversy amongst researchers, yes, it's needed, yes, it's not, it does this, it does that. But in reality, we're going to see that there's a lot of stuff that can be done with vanadium. So this is what's called the oxidation state, and it has to do with the number of electrons. And these are up at the top, there's their ions, there's the VO2 plus, there's the VO2 plus with the superscript. That's so the first one, VO2 with a subscript plus, is vanadium compounded with oxygen. And it's got one positive charge to it. That's what the anionic state is. It has a charge. The second one, which looks very similar except for the position of the two, where the two is as a superscript, that's VO2. That's just VO, 1V, 1O, and it has a two, a positive charge of two electrons. It's minus two electrons because that makes a positive. Then we have the V3 plus, which is a 3 plus positive charge, just the vanadium, and then the V2 plus. And they have different names, and we'll be going through that as we go through the presentation. The color that they show up in water, when they're in solution, are shown there. Yellow for the VO2 with the two oxygens, the blue, green, and violet. And the oxidation state, meaning that there's 5, 4, 3, and 2, and that's the ability for it to accept electrons. So the name at the bottom there, dioxovanadium. That's the first one. The next one is oxovanadium. So dioxo, meaning there's two oxygens. Oxovanadium, meaning there's one oxygen. The next one is just vanadium. Vanadium with a 3 charge and a vanadium with a 2 charge. So that's basically what we're looking at. So there's a variety of states. The states have different functions in the body, different uses in the body. And we'll see that there's a switching between states, which we've seen with a lot of our other nutrients as well, that there's the switching of states from, the stomach to the intestine to the where it's absorbed to then where it's stored. They're in different states and they have different functionings in the body. So that's not stuff that you have to memorize, but if you're reading an article and it's talking about oxidation states of vanadium or, specific types of vanadium, that you have a sense of what that is all about. If you remember oxidation reduction, right? Oxidation, and we look for things to be, we want them to be reduced. In a fully reduced state, something is useful. In an oxidized state, it's already lost some of that charge, and it's in a free radical kind of state. So, for example, a lot of the different reactions that we've seen in the chemical responses, like oxidized glutathione and reduced glutathione, oxidized glutathione doesn't have the same usefulness in our body and protection because it's lost its ability to be an antioxidant because it's already oxidized, right? It's already done its oxidized antioxidant job, and now it's oxidized itself. So it's almost like they commit hari kari. They, sacrifice themselves, and then they get reduced, and they go back to their cells. So these constant state of oxidation and reduction. If you've studied chemistry, organic chemistry, you understand that. It's not always everybody's favorite thing to talk about, but I just talk about it in a way that helps to make sense of some of the functions that we're going to talk about. So the absorption of vanadium. Different oxidation states have different levels of absorption. Food is mainly in the vanadate state, and 5 to 10% is absorbed from the intestinal tract. So even though there's small amounts in food as it is, and only 5 to 10% get absorbed, it's reduced. So the vanadate is a more oxidized state, reduced to vanadiol in the stomach, and then it's absorbed in the small intestine. The vanadate is thought to be absorbed using the same carrier system as phosphate. And we're going to see some reactions where it gets involved within phosphorylation reactions where that has an impact. Vanadate is 3 to 5 times more efficiently absorbed than vanadiol. So you might ask, which I did, why then, if the food is vanadate, why then does it get converted to vanadiol and then get absorbed if vanadate is 3 times more efficiently absorbed? The answer is, we don't know. I haven't found any research to say why, because I question that a lot. I question it because it happens with a lot of the nutrients, is that it comes from one state, goes to another state, crosses the wall, gets converted back, and it just seems like a lot of extra reactions that the body's going through. But we don't know everything there is to know about the human body and how it's functioning. So someday we may understand all that better, maybe if we have a deeper understanding of the cellular biology mechanics of it. But for now, just know that the vanadate is absorbed more efficiently, but the vanadial is what gets converted in the stomach. In the blood cells, the plasma, and other fluid components of the body, it's mostly vanadate, or it gets converted to vanadial. But in order to get converted to vanadial, right, because vanadate is oxidized, vanadial is reduced, we need an antioxidant type of thing. We need an electron donor. So we have basically glutathione, NADH, and ascorbic acid helps to convert vanadate to vanadial. Okay, so it's not a free reaction. In other words, switching between these different states in order to go from the oxidized state of vanadium to the reduced state of vanadium, vanadate to vanadial, we need antioxidants and important cofactors that are used in biological transformation. So glutathione, NADH, ascorbic acid. In the plasma and liver, the vanadial binds to albumin, an iron-containing protein such as ferritin and transferrin. So, you know how things kind of can't, they don't just generally float around in the bloodstream by themselves. They oftentimes bind, like we have all kinds of things that bind to globulin and albumin and ferritin, like iron usually binds to ferritin and transferrin. And it enters the cells as vanadate. So it may start as vanadate, gets absorbed as vanadial, gets absorbed, and then gets converted back to vanadate in order to be absorbed. Seems a little inefficient. It's the wisdom of our bodies, and we don't quite fully understand why all that biological transformation happens. So let's look at the transport and storage of it. It's a very tiny amount that's stored in the body, right? It's only about 100 micrograms. I mean, think about that. If we take a vitamin, vitamin B12, for example, I think the RDA is like around 150, but we usually give people therapeutic doses of more like 1,000, right? But the total body store of vanadium is that 100 micrograms. And if you think about, I like to give people a liquid vitamin B12, and I have an ionic vitamin B12 where one drop or two drops is 100 micrograms. It's that little is the amount of vanadium that's stored in the body. And it's used fairly rapidly, so we need a little bit, you know, coming in all the time. And the good news is there's small amounts in a lot of different foods that most people eat on a regular basis. Most of it's eliminated in the feces. Some of it's eliminated in the urine, and very small amounts are excreted in the bile. It accumulates in organ systems, and the highest concentration is in the kidney after it's taken in, but then it gets moved for long-term storage into the bone. And the clinical relevance of this is that we use vanadium. We'll see when we look at biology and nutritional and how it affects the body, is we use it as a supplement to help with blood sugar regulation, to help with insulin sensitivity. And it's pretty large doses that are needed for that, pharmacologic doses. So like 25 grams, milligrams would be used, right? So 100, that's like 25 times the body pool is used. And that's what seems to have a pharmacologic effect. And that's why when you look at the studies, long-term use of high-dose vanadium in the form of vanadial sulfate can actually be damaging to the kidneys. So we always caution people, if you're going to take it for a chronic, long-standing, either diabetes or insulin resistant that doesn't seem as responsive to what's going on, then, you know, or to implement intervention, then what we do is we only have them take it for 4 weeks. Okay, so it's really important. So liver and spleen store some, and there's also some stored in fat and lipid serum. Okay, the composition and chemical form determines how much is absorbed, right? So it seems like the vanadate form is absorbed better than the vanadial form, et cetera. So depends on that. So what does it do? That's what we're here for. Like, we're in the trenches dealing with people, helping them to manipulate their physiology and biochemistry using nutritional substances, right? And foods first, of course. So like I said before, it has a pharmacological effect in high doses, but its definitive roles in biochemistry are not established. So all of these things I'm going to mention are possible, probable, you know, the studies that seem to indicate, but nobody's hanging their hat on it and writing it in a textbook that this is so. So keep them with a grain of salt. But definitely the most common way that we use it clinically is for severe insulin resistance and for the diabetes, type 2 and type 1. And we'll see that when we look at a slide that goes into that detail. It inhibits the sodium-potassium ATPase pump, which has an impact on the phosphorylation of ATP. It also stimulates, or thought to, right, adenylate cyclase, which is related to cyclic AMP formation from ATP, which then stimulates protein kinases. So if that all stuff is blurry to you, and that's something that's important for you to understand, I always love to pull out my Krebs cycle chart, and you can see what effect various things have on the Krebs cycle. So this would have an effect on Krebs cycle and also on energy metabolism. The vanadyl ion is an enzyme cofactor in several hormone, glucose, of course, we talked about already, lipid, bone, and tooth metabolism pathways. Okay? And again, small amounts, tiny amounts, and we're not like saying that this is absolute concrete. This is what's assumed based on most of the studies that have been done have been in smaller mammals like rats, and then, you know, we'll look and see that some of the studies have been done on bacteria and algae. Okay? So it mimics the effects of insulin as vanadyl sulfate. So if you find a supplement, vanadium sulfate or vanadyl sulfate, it's going to mimic the effects of insulin. I used to recommend people when they were going through my Before Be Gone blood sugar balancing program to, if they had some really long-standing chronic problems with insulin resistance, that they start out and just do 4 weeks of vanadyl sulfate at about 25 milligram dose. Unfortunately, the source for that dried up, and it might be because of the studies that show that it can be damaging to the kidneys in long-term use, but we used to get it from a company called Thorne, and they don't sell it anymore in that high, and we haven't found anybody that does. So if anybody finds anything like that, be sure to share it with the rest of the group. It actually can also stimulate insulin productions in the islet cells, but that's definitely in rats. Okay. Association with iodine metabolism and thyroid function. Again, those were done in animal studies, but it seems like there's an effect on the thyroid peroxidase and the effect of thyroid and iodine uptake. So it can have an effect on thyroid if there's somebody is deficient. And that's not my first go-to place if somebody has thyroid problems. There's a lot of other nutrients and, of course, lifestyle and diet things that we're looking at first, but certainly it's something to consider. It stimulates the growth of red blood cells. It has effects on lipoproteins. It has an effect on, of course, oxidation reactions. We know it's a very volatile atom because it has so many different oxidation states. In bacteria, it seems to be associated with an enzyme called nitrogenase, which reduces molecular nitrogen to ammonia, and that's a way to, you know, take the extra nitrogen that comes from amino acids in the diet or excess protein in the diet or unused protein or breakdown products of protein and convert it to ammonia for it to be excreted in the urine. Related to the iodoperoxidase and bromoperoxidase in algae and lichens, and those catalyze the oxidation of halide ions, if you recall, are the iodine, bromine, fluoride, chlorine, and of course radium, by hydrogen peroxide. So that's an important factor when it comes to those kinds of reactions. And then the haloperoxidases, such as thyroid peroxidase, the vanadium deprivation in rats has affected the response of thyroid peroxidase to changing dietary iodine. So thyroid peroxidase is an enzyme that helps in the formation of your thyroid hormone. And it's affected by iodine. The more iodine you put in, the more that enzyme can have an effect and do its work. And it seems to me that it seems in the studies that vanadium affected that, but only in rats. So what kind of things influence? A lot of our nutrients have a lot of things that influence their absorptions. So things that decrease the absorption of vanadium would be chromium, chloride, calcium, potassium, iodine, sodium, sulfur, and sugar. Okay, so we don't want to take vanadium necessarily as part of a multivitamin mineral supplement, because you're going to have those other factors in there that are going to interfere. And because vanadium is available in such small amounts, it's probably going to degrade the clinical impact of that. The things that can increase the absorption would be selenium, zinc, and fluoride. Okay, and fluoride is not something that we go ahead and take in because there's no biological need for large amounts of fluoride, but we do have, with fluoride, we do have it in water. People have it in their water. So, you know, that might argue that tap water is good for improving vanadium absorption, but given the downside of tap water, I'm not convinced that that's something that I would be telling my glass patients. So let's look at some of the nutrient functions. We've already talked about how it can have effects on glucose control in both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And we have a whole separate slide where I'll talk to you about that and the mechanism. It's also used sometimes as an aid in bodybuilding because it has possible anabolic effects, similar to insulin. So it helps with the liver and the muscles to store glycogen. And glycogen is that stored sugar that people who are doing bodybuilding and other kinds of exercise type things really need to be aware of, you know, really like that effect. So it's possible. But again, you know, because of the downside of taking long-term vanadium supplementation, you know, the jury's out as to how really important that is clinically. Some studies showed that there was possible anti-carcinogenic properties related to breast cancer. That was in animal models. Nothing's been done with that in human models, but, you know, a lot of times those things apply. It may promote faster recovery from food poisoning or other infections. It does have some anti-infective properties that would apply there. It can help with regulating blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, and kidney disease. In physiologic doses, when we get up into higher doses, it can actually be damaging to those tissues and functions. And it also supports bones, teeth, and the reproductive system. So let's look at a few of these in a little bit more detail. So vanadium in type 2 diabetes, it can improve glucose control in people with type 2 and the sensitivity to insulin in both type 1 and 2. So, and it also helps to improve the secretion by the islet cells in the pancreas of insulin. So high doses have been tested as an aid in controlling blood pressure, and it can have an impact on the GI and the kidney. So if we have too high a doses, it can cause intestinal absorption problems, but also, and it also impairs the absorption of glucose from the gut. So that, you know, is a, it could be a negative thing in somebody who's thin and is needing more nutrition, but on the other hand, it could be positive, because it can have an effect on decrease and slowing down the absorption of sugar, which would have a positive effect on blood pressure, on blood sugar. Sorry about that. Animal studies show that it's got an insulin mimic. It helps the nutrients get into the cells, especially the muscle cells, liver cells, and fat cells. And then in human studies, they've shown that, clinical studies, that show that the daily insulin requirement in type 1 diabetics was decreased as much as 14%. And that could be really positive because we know that there's a lot of downsides to excess insulin. Hyperinsulinemia has a lot of downsides in terms of the stiffening of the arterial walls and the glycosylation of the, yeah, so it's mainly that and the effect on the cells. Okay. What else? We talked about how it increases insulin sensitivity. So it actually increases and helps the cells to pull up the sugars and the nutrients better. So it's increasing and improving the insulin sensitivity. And we know when we're taking somebody through an insulin reset that we want to be able to improve their cell sensitivity. That's one of our biggest goals when we do a metabolic reset as part of a blood sugar balancing program. And the form that's usually used in these studies was vanadyl sulfate or sodium metavanidate. So vanadyl sulfate is the one I've most frequently used, and it's had really positive effects. But again, stick to no more than 4 weeks at a time because of the kidney problems. Vanadium stimulates glucose oxidation and transport in fat cells and the synthesis of glycogen, which we said earlier, in liver and muscles. And it inhibits the liver gluconeogenesis, meaning the breakdown of the glycogen to sugar. So that helps to control the blood sugars as well. inhibits the absorption of glucose in the gut, and it enhances the stimulating effect of insulin on DNA synthesis. So all in all, there's a lot of positives here for vanadium and blood sugar balance, especially in type 2 diabetes, but we have to proceed with caution. There are some supplements for blood sugar control that have a small amount of vanadium in them, but again, it's in the microgram doses of vanadium, very small amounts. And when we get into the more therapeutic doses, it's a lot higher doses. Vanadium and bone health, right? So they've done some in vitro tests on bone cells, and the vanadate appeared to stimulate bone cell proliferation. No real studies in humans that do that. It's also shown to stimulate the synthesis of collagen, right? The connective tissue that holds together the joints and the muscles. And also the gut lining, important for that. A role in calcium metabolism and red blood cell production. So it's been, postulated, seen, and then enzyme stimulation may, let me write that down. That slide is all messed up. Yeah, so it may have a role in the formation of bone and teeth because of the way it stimulates the uptake and the collagen synthesis and cell proliferation. So cholesterol, let's talk about vanadium and cholesterol. It seems to inhibit cholesterol synthesis in animals and in humans, leading to decreased plasma levels of cholesterol and reduced aortic cholesterol. Now, that could be a good thing, but in someone who is thin and has fat malabsorption and also has some hormonal imbalances, like in somebody in adrenal fatigue where they may not be making enough of their sex hormones, then lowering the cholesterol too much could be problematic because it can decrease the production of those hormones. So, it's like a Goldilocks principle all the time is what's too much and what's not enough. It can initiate an increase in the contractile force of the heart. That's the inotropic effect. Okay, sorry about that. I always have a hard time saying that word. It's the inotropic effect. It's involved in catecholamine and lipid metabolism. Catecholamine, right, the adrenaline and norepinephrine. And also involved in the production of coenzyme A, which is very important for fat metabolism, but also is important in the conversion from cholesterol downstream to pregnenolone and into the steroid synthesis pathway. So there's a lot of places where it might have some therapeutic effect. But again, we have to be really careful with the amount we use. Some studies show that it has some anti-carcinogenic properties. There was mice with breast cancer, basically mammary tumor growth. It was blocked by feeding 25 micrograms of vanadium per gram of diet. Now, wait a minute, 25 micrograms doesn't sound like too much, but per gram of diet. Now, if you think about us, how much we eat, that would be huge, huge quantities of vanadium. So I'm not exactly sure how much a typical rat eats, but it's 25 micrograms per gram of diet. But that increased the tumor incidence, reduced the average tumor count, and then prolonged the cancer-free time without inhibiting the growth or the health of the animal. So it seemed to be very positive, at least on these rats. So lucky rats, right? Not enough studies to show whether it has potential in human cancers to that effect. Things that deplete vanadium, high sugar intake, malabsorption, and then, of course, those nutrients that interfere with its absorption that we talked about earlier. Nutrient interactions, the main ones are chromium and copper, although the others that we listed earlier can have an effect on decreased absorption of the vanadium. But these actually... it's not a good idea to take vanadium and chromium at the same time. And if you have too much copper and not enough vanadium, it's associated with a greater occurrence of spinal degeneration. Again, not enough studies to be conclusive, but these are some of the areas that we're looking at. So we've got what causes vanadium deficiency? Well, the soils are depleted. That's basically it. Very rare for people to have deficiencies of vanadium. Vanadium we need very little, and it's available in trace amounts. The things that we've been talking about, the conditions that vanadium can help, it's not so much from a nutritional standpoint that it's helping. It's more like it's having a pharmacological effect. And whenever you use nutrients for pharmacological effect, you still have to be careful about like the LD50, which, the lethal dose there's not going to be, but something along those lines, which is at what level is there some compromise to function when you get real high, like kidney function when you get onto high doses of vanadium for long periods of time. So it's not something that we necessarily go out and supplement with people, but there are conditions where it might have a pharmacological effect, and the side effects are less damaging than the side effects of some of the actual drugs that are used for that. So what kind of things can happen in vanadium deficiency? Again, it's very rare, but what's been seen mostly in animal models, spinal degeneration, stunted growth, alkalosing spondylitis, along with elevated molybdenum, calcium, and magnesium, elevated cholesterol and triglycerides, because remember we talked about how it helps to bring the cholesterol down, reduced growth and reproductive ability in animals. Human deficiencies are not really reported, but goats fed a low vanadium diet develop birth defects. So does that apply to humans? Maybe, maybe not. Increased infant mortality, hypoglycemia, hyperinsulinemia, right? So that's why it's so good in diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. So again, it's very rare to see somebody's completely deficient in vanadium. Like many of the very trace minerals, most of the time when you see somebody who has a deficiency, it's usually because they've been on parenteral nutrition. Parenteral nutrition meaning tube fed, right? They're in the hospital, they've had some sort of illness, injury, surgery, and they're being tube fed and they leave the vanadium out. So what about excess vanadium? Well, greater than 2 milligrams a day on a consistent basis can impact. It can impact people with bipolar disorder. So if you've got somebody who's read about vanadium and, oh, I'm going to get my blood glucose under control, and they have bipolar disorder, really caution them to be careful. Somebody with depression, same thing. Now, this is one of those, is it, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Is the vanadium high because of the depression, or is the depression a result of the high vanadium? It's one of those correlative but not really causative effects. Potentiation of insulin or oral diabetes medications, right? And sometimes that's what we want. But again, if you're putting somebody on therapeutic doses of vanadium for their blood sugar control, and they're already on either insulin or an oral diabetic agent like metformin, you've got to really be careful and have them monitoring their glucose, because you can see very low levels of glucose happening as a result of the potentiation between the two. We've already talked about kidney damage. There's also some GI problems. Some people just can't take it because they get nauseous, flatulent, cramps, diarrhea, and even discoloration of the stool, making the stool seem kind of bright and metallic looking. A weakened immune system, fatigue and lethargy, weight loss, dehydration, green discoloration of the tongue, loss of trabecular bone, trabecular are the long bones, arthritis, aching hands and feet, you know, bones in there, teeth, tonsils, ears, and jaw. So that's kind of vague, right? How do you know when your tonsils are aching? Now, your throat sore is what people will say, but again, that's what the literature is showing. And then colds. People who get colds a lot, possibly having excess vanadium. So ask them about their supplements. Always ask people about their supplements. And if you see something that's high, like one of the students on one of the calls recently asked me, here's one of my patients, this is what she's taking, and that seems like a really high dose of that, what should I be watching for? And that's the kind of thing you just always want to watch, because people think they could just take vitamins, and it's like just, you know, eating, you know, greens or something, and it's not, because they're concentrated and they're isolated, and when they get out of balance with the way the body was intending to use them, that's what when toxicity stuff. So with people who are chronically exposed to vanadium, like people in mines where they're mining vanadium, that's where you usually see it. And that could be hypertension, high blood pressure, neurological disorders, hepatic, cardiac, and renal damage. And the other ways that people can get vanadium contamination is through burning of petroleum. Okay. With age, it can accumulate in the lungs. So if somebody's exposed to a lot, as they get older, they're going to get an accumulation in their lungs. So, you know, people dying from as minors and being exposed to things used to happen a lot. I had my grandfather on my mother's side died when he was 29 years old as a result of tuberculosis that he got because he was a miner. He worked in the mine and it accumulated in his lungs. So there's some serious things that can happen, but you're not going to see it very often. I just tell you so you're aware, especially if you live in some place where there are, you know, a mining town. So So how do you assess vanadium nutrition? They really don't have any great ways to do it. It's not like we have a functional test like MMA for B12 or that you can do a blood serum level of like vitamin D. It's just, there's no real way of measuring it. So the typical concentrations are 0.4 to 2.8 micrograms or nanograms per milliliter in those that take it. So if we look at people's blood levels, those are the ranges. But we can't really tell a deficiency based on blood levels. And the urinary excretion averages about 8 micrograms a day. The RDA ranges are from 100 or 10 to 30 micrograms, so very small amounts that we're taking in. And if you think about how little that really is, it's about a millionth of the amount of calcium we need. So really it's a teeny, 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 tiny amount. The safe upper limits for adults is set at 1.8 milligrams. But again, there are some supplements that go higher due to looking for a pharmacological effect, especially in blood glucose. Although, like I said, some of those have been taken off the market, and maybe it was a safety issue. So here's a few food sources. The ones at the beginning are the highest, and I have another chart on the herbs, and the herbs are actually the highest. But mushrooms, radishes, corn, it's available in a lot of really common foods. Green beans, soy, fish, soy and fish. Mushrooms are there twice. Olives, garlic, carrots, sunflower seeds, olive oil, most fats and oil, shellfish, like oysters. The cereals, which are not, you know, the gluten-containing cereals are not great just because they have vanadium. There's other sources in eggs. So there's a lot of things that contain it. But the ones that contain the most are the mushrooms and the herbs, the parsley, dill, and black pepper. So you can get plenty of it if you are like me where you love to make dips, and I love to make garlic dill dips. So I'm getting a fair amount of vanadium when I do that. So, you know, it always comes down to a variety, getting people to eat a variety of foods and not just stick to one food all the time and not try to rely on getting all their nutrients from supplements. So the forms in that you might see, vanadyl sulfate, and that's the one that has been most studied to be effective in blood glucose regulation, sodium metavanidate, sodium orthovanidate. And the best time to take vanadium is pretty much any time, but it's best absorbed when you take it with food. So just avoid taking it with those supplements like chromium and copper so that you avoid the absorption and some of the others that were listed on that slide. Some people say to take it on an empty stomach. I mean, the jury's out, but most people do best if you take it with food. And most people get nauseous if they take supplements with that, or a lot of people do anyway. So there's a few references, a lot of good information in our textbook, Advanced Nutrition and Human Metabolism, something from the, I think that's University of Maryland.edu. I don't remember what the UMM stands for, and then another couple of articles related to the specific uses of vanadium. So that's really all I have about vanadium, and I'm going to call it a day, and we'll talk to you on the next nutrient. Bye now.